If I mention the name Aaron Ralston, does that ring a bell for anyone in here? Probably not very many people remember the name, but here's what I guarantee every single person in this room will remember. They'll remember his story. You see, back in April of 2003, Aaron set out for a weekend of camping and hiking by himself in southern Utah. And he was out hiking on a Saturday. It was about 3 o'clock, and he decided he was going to go down this fissure, this little canyon. As he was going down this canyon, climbing down this canyon, this boulder came loose. And as he went to protect himself, he put his hands up. And when the boulder hit his hands, it actually pinned his right hand against the side of that fissure. Maybe you're starting to remember the story now. And Aaron tried to jerk his hand out 3 times, and it never budged. In fact, he was able to look at his hand almost immediately and realize that his hand probably was mangled beyond ever being able to use it again. And so here in that moment, he is trapped. He is trapped by himself in this canyon in the middle of Utah with no hope of anybody coming to get him. And so he begins to go through the process of what does he need to do to survive. And see, he goes through his supplies. He didn't have very much with him. He wasn't planning some crazy long expedition. He was just out hiking that afternoon. And so he looked through his supplies. He had 2 burritos he bought at the gas station. He had a bottle of water. He had a couple flashlights and this cheap multi-purpose tool that his mom gave him for Christmas. That's all he had besides a camera and a video camera. And so he begins to think in the first couple hours, he's going through different ways he can try to get his hand from being trapped. And so he tries, first of all, like most of us would, to move the boulder. But this boulder weighs over 800 pounds. And so he was unsuccessful at budging this boulder. And then he gets out his multi-purpose tool and he starts trying to chip away at this boulder. To no luck, though, he's actually made no progress whatsoever. He got out some ropes and put together this lever system and pulley system to try to pull the rock off of his hand, but it was unsuccessful. And so guess what? For 131 hours, 5 days and 7 hours, he was trapped there. And he started out with a pretty good spirit. I'm going to make it out of this. I'm going to get out of this. I'll make it out of alive. But after a couple days, his spirits began to change. In fact, in his book, aptly titled Between a Rock and a Hard Place, listen to what he writes. I no longer have any options that I haven't already examined and tabled as ineffective or deadly. Even though I followed each potential scenario through its preliminary stages, I can't presently go further with any of them. I'm stymied at every turn. I'll die before help arrives. I can't excavate my hand. I can't lift the boulder. I can't cut off my arm. A sinking depression hits me for the very first time. The optimism that has graced me for the last day is gone, and I feel lonely, angry, and scared. I whimper to myself, I am going to die. Probably in another 2 days, not that it matters when, I will die here. I will waste away here. I will shrivel up, slumping here with my arm trapped in this place. I mean, why do I even bother drinking water? It's only prolonging my ordeal. Dismally, I wish for a flash flood to end it all. The thought of intentionally slitting my wrist fleetingly dashes in and out of my mind. My despair turns to adolescent anger. I hate this boulder. I hate it. I hate this canyon. I hate this more cold slab pressing against my right forearm. I hate the faint, musty smell of the greenish slime thinly glazing the bottom of the southern canyon wall behind my legs. I hate the breezes that blow grit in my face and the dim half-light of this claustrophobic hole where even the sandstone looks menacing. I hate this. I punctuate each word with slaps of my left palm against the boulder as tears well in my eyes. The echoes of my anguish reverberate up the canyon and vanish into the afternoon. I'm stuck. I'm trapped. I'm not getting out alive. Boy, that sounds like a desperate moment, doesn't it? And maybe you're remembering the story. Maybe you know that that wasn't the end of the story. Because at the end of that 5-day, 7-hour trial, at the end of 131 hours, Aaron decided to do something to free himself that most of us deem unimaginable. And if you remember the story, you know what he did. He used the leverage of the boulder and the wall to snap his right forearm in two. break both bones. And then with that small multi-purpose tool that he'd been using for 131 hours to chisel away, he began to amputate his very own arm. It took him an hour. But he said once he cut his arm and he pulled free that he felt reborn. He felt a freedom that he never felt in his life. But his ordeal wasn't done. You see, what he had to do next is he had to actually go and rappel a class 4 rappel with one arm. He had lost over 40 pounds by this point, 25% of his blood. He was dehydrated, disoriented, and he went and did a class 4 rappel. But he wasn't done. He had an 8-mile hike to get out of there. Thankfully, God sent a couple with their kid who were hiking 6 miles into his hike to get him to freedom. Now, we hear that story. And if you're like me, when you heard that story, I mean, you were just impressed with Aaron. Because we're impressed with stories of people who find them stuck in dire circumstances, people who find themselves trapped and find their way out. We're impressed by those stories. And maybe, I don't know, I don't think so. I don't think anybody in this room has ever been trapped under an 800-pound boulder for 5 days and 7 hours and got out by amputating your arm. If that's the case, let me know. But here's what I do know. Every one of us in this room have felt just like Aaron felt. Trapped. Hopeless. Wondering if you're going to make it out alive. You know, here's the good thing. God has an app for that. God has an app for that. And last week we began this series called God Has an App, where we are taking modern day technology and merging it with the ancient wisdom of the Bible, downloading in our lives so we can apply it when these situations face us. And my hope from last week is that you left last week with a little more hope than you walked in here with last week. That maybe you went home and you put together a 120-day plan to make some memories over the summer. Or maybe you went home last weekend and thought about forgiveness. And you thought about picking up the phone and maybe made a call to someone in your family or sent an email and got some forgiveness on Mother's Day. My hope is you left with some things that you could apply to your life. And this week, we simply want to talk about an app for when we feel trapped. Now, have you ever had one of those days where things just absolutely went perfect? You woke up in the morning with extra pep in your step, kind of a song in your soul, and you make the absolute perfect cup of coffee, and you get in your car, and every red light turns to green for you. Cars kind of like part like Moses in the Red Sea, and you pull up to the office, and there's a spot at the very front in the shade waiting for you. And you go in, and your boss calls you in and lets you know you've done a great job. Your coworkers surprisingly take you to lunch and buy your lunch. You come home, your kids show you papers, all A's. And you get to the end of the day, and you're like, man, this was a wonderful day. This was such a good day. And you think back, why was this day so good? And you remember, because the day before was so bad. That's why it was so good. You see, the same thing is true with Jesus. When Jesus rose from the dead on that first Easter Sunday, the reason that day was so good was because the day before was so awful, was so bad. You see, not a single disciple was placing bets on Jesus coming back to life. Not a single one of them. You see, Jesus was trapped behind an 800-pound boulder, and no one thought he was making it out alive. I mean, Peter wasn't talking to John, going, John, what do you think he's going to say to us tomorrow morning? I mean, John, who was with Jesus when he died, he wasn't wondering what was going to happen the next day. Mary Magdalene, she wasn't wondering what it was going to look like. You see, they had given up. I mean, they had hit the wall. They were frustrated. They were scared. They were an absolute mess at this point. Remember what the Bible said? That after Jesus was arrested, these guys fled. They ran for the hills. They ran for cover. And when Jesus laid in that tomb on that Saturday, their hope and their dreams were shattered, were gone. And now not only was Jesus trapped behind this 800-pound boulder, but now these guys were trapped without faith, without belief that anything in their life could ever be good again. You see, they gave it all up to follow Jesus. And you would think they would remember a couple of the stories, a couple of quotes that Jesus, because Jesus told them multiple times, didn't he? I mean, how many times did Jesus say, hey guys, just want to let you know, one day I'm going to be betrayed. I'm going to be handed over to the authorities. I'm going to be beaten and I'm going to be killed. I'm going to be put in a tomb. But on the third day, I'm back. I mean, he told them that multiple times. You'd think somebody would have been keeping score. I mean, that's what I'm thinking. I mean, somebody would have been keeping score. Someone said, well, you know what? Jesus said he'll be back in 3 days. Friday, day one. It's Saturday. It's day two. Guys, we better get up early tomorrow because tomorrow is day three. He is coming back. But not a single person did. I mean, these guys weren't ready to see Jesus. Mary Magdalene, what she was doing was preparing his spices to actually embalm Jesus, because they didn't believe that Jesus was going to come out of that tomb alive. Let me ask you this. What is it in your life that has you trapped? What is it in your life that has you trapped here today? You see, I've been in ministry 16 years, and usually it boils down to one of three things. It usually boils down to you're trapped by your past, your present, or your future. Your past or your present or your future, a lot of times it boils down, I hear this so often, that you know what? I am trapped by the failure of my past. I can't get past the failure of my past life, what I have done the days before today. So let's just do this. Let's just get this out of the way early on, because I want to put everything on the table to make sure we are all in here on an even playing field. So let me read through a list of a couple things. And I just want you to think about this list and see if any of these things apply to you. And then when we're done, we'll kind of, you know, raise our hands and be honest with one another in here today. So see if some of these things apply to you. If you ever got cut from a team that you were trying out for, if you ever failed an audition for a part you were trying to get, if you ever did not get the job that you were applying for, if you ever didn't get the promotion that you wanted, if you ever bought a car or a house that was a lemon, if you ever had a business deal that went wrong or a job that ended up being you got fired from, if you ever failed a test in school, if you ever got a speeding ticket, if you ever fell asleep during a sermon where you should have stayed awake in, if you ever stayed awake when you wish you would have fallen asleep during the sermon, maybe that's you. If you ever lost your cool with a telemarketer or a teenager or a toddler, if you ever experienced a moral, athletic, academic, social, relational, financial, marital, spiritual, or vocational failure of any kind, if that is you, let's just raise our hands together and just be honest with one another. All right, look around. Keep them up. Keep them up. It's okay. Look around. To make you feel better today, we've all been there. We all have been there. Now, I know some of you are looking around going, I never failed, but the person next to me looks like they blew it big time, right? You see, the reason I bring that up is to make this point. No matter how good we all look on the outside, every single one of us have wrestled and struggled with failure in our past. We have. And maybe it's the shame, maybe it's the regret, maybe it's the guilt that has us trapped right now. Or maybe it's our present circumstances, the challenging circumstances that we find ourselves in right now that's got us trapped. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe you are in a dead-end job. I mean, you had a chance to go to college, but instead you decided to buy the car, and you had payments, and you met a girl, and you got her, well, you know the rest of the story. Or maybe for you, it's you're trapped by a loveless marriage, and now you're just kind of like roommates. Or maybe what has you trapped is an economic recovery that hasn't quite made its way to you yet. Or maybe what has you trapped is little pieces of green paper or a piece of plastic that you just continue to spend and spend and spend more. Or maybe what has you trapped is something physical. Maybe it's a sickness, something in your body that is breaking down, that is limiting you. Or maybe what has you trapped is a beverage. And if you don't get your fix, you're a hot mess, and watch out, world, because you are coming. Or maybe for you, it's TV that has you trapped. And it's hours upon hours of reality TV and hours upon hours of sports, and you just can't hit the off button on the remote control. Or maybe for you, it's that smartphone or computer that you just continue to surf. You continue to Twitter and to Facebook and to text, and you continue to hit yes to those sites you know you shouldn't be on. Or maybe for you, it's fear of the future. Fear of the future. You know what the number one fear that people have? It's not coulrophobia, the fear of clowns, okay? It's not that. I know some of you may say it is. The number one fear that we have is simply this: public speaking. Raise your hand if that's kind of your number one fear in life, public speaking. You come here like, yeah. Mark, really? Come on now. Number one fear people have is public speaking. You know what number two is? Death. Now, I don't know about you, but I kind of like, what? I mean, people would rather die than get up and speak in front of people. I mean, that just doesn't make sense to me, you know. But maybe number three is the fear of death while public speaking. Maybe that's what it is. I've been there before. I've felt that way on stage. But here's what I do know. I do know that death has got to be a close second, because people don't like to talk about death. In fact, you want to clear out a party, go into the party and start going, you know what? I was thinking about my funeral this week and what I'd like to have. What would you like to have at your funeral? I mean, that will clear out a party quicker than anything you could do. I mean, babysitters miraculously will start calling. People will develop this cough and this sickness. People will be diving out windows to get away from that conversation. People don't like to talk about it. Friends, here's what I do know. There are some people in this room here today that are trapped. Trapped by their past, trapped by their present, trapped by their future. Trapped by their past failures. Trapped by the challenging circumstances they find in their life right now in the present. Trapped by fear of what if. What does the future hold? And in John chapter 20, Mary Magdalene brings all three of those to the table. As she comes to visit that tomb on that Sunday after Jesus' death on the cross, she comes and she is bringing all of those fears, all of that grief, and all that heartache. Listen to what it says in John chapter 20, verse 11. It says this: Mary stood outside the tomb crying. As she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb and saw two angels in white seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. They asked her, "Woman, why are you crying?" And I love this response because it's just so nonchalant. She's talking to angels, all right? And here's what she says: "They have taken my Lord away," she said, "and I don't know where they have put him." You see, the thought never crossed her mind that Jesus just might be alive. He might be alive. She thought someone had taken his body. You see, Mary Magdalene buried more than just a friend. She buried maybe the only person in her life who ever valued her, who ever helped her, who ever believed in her. And now, in her life, that future was dead and buried, and there was no hope. It was all over. And you can just see her despair. You can see her grief that is just so deep here in this moment. Even two angels dressed in white can't get her attention that just maybe Jesus is alive. Goes on in verse 14, at this, she turned and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not realize that it was Jesus. "Woman," he said, "why are you crying?" You see, the empty tomb did not lift her spirits. Two angels dressed in white did not lift her spirits. So Jesus takes matters into his own hands. He takes matters into his own hands. Why? Why would Jesus do this? Why would he be so persistent? Why would he be so patient? Why? Because he is a God of love. He is a God of love, and he had paid an enormous price to love her. He paid an enormous price to love you. And he's paid an enormous price to love me. Now, some of you have been wondering what this is right here. This is something that my grandfather gave me after he passed away. This is a plate of penny red stamps. Now, I know there's probably a ton of stamp collectors in this room, so I'll bar the long explanation of what this is. You see, in Britain, there were two stamps early on. There was the penny black, and then after the penny black became the penny red. And this began in about 1855 and ran through the late 1800s. And my grandfather was a stamp collector. And even as a kid, I'd go down to Musty basement. He'd be down there all day long playing with his stamps, messing around. And I'd come down, and what he would do is he'd pour out a tub of stamps. He'd say, sort them by country or color or by price. Now that I'm a parent, I know what he was doing, you know. And I would sit down there, and I'd go through these hours upon hours going through these stamps. And I'd find one that I like. And I'd say, "Grandpa, tell me about this." And then he'd give me a history lesson. I mean, he was the original Cliff Clavin, I promise you, all right? He would give me a history lesson, and he'd tell me all about it. Then he'd go back, and I'd go back to my work. And after he passed away a couple years ago, he wanted to make sure a couple of his key collections made it to me. And this was one of them right here, the penny red stamp collection. And last year, I went to my grandma's up in Ohio to pick some of this stuff up. And I came home, and I remember coming home, and I called my boys into the kitchen table, and I put all the stamps down on the table and said, "Boy, you got to come check out all these cool stamps." Yeah, that's exactly what they were like. "Really cool stamps? I mean, come on, Dad, you know. Stamps are pieces of paper," and they're looking at them. It says one, you know, is it 1 cent? I said, "Well, yeah, it was 1 cent. Are they used even? You know, okay, they're half a cent, you know, whatever it may be." And they're looking at these stamps, and we're going through, and I'm explaining what the penny red is and how important it is and what I think the value of them is. So what I did is I went to the world's leading expert on value of things. So I Googled eBay, and I went in there, and I said, "Put in penny red stamp." And it came up, and there was a stamp, one of them, for $50. Because, like, oh, that's pretty cool. You know, we watch Pawn Stars, you know, so we know how this works in our house. And, you know, there's got to be more. So I Googled a plate of penny reds. And it came up a little more, $2,000 someone bought one for. Boys are going, "That's pretty cool." And so I keep searching a little bit more and put in the actual plate number, and stuff started coming up, you know, $5,000, $8,000. Now my boys are pretty excited. In fact, they leave the room there and searching through their closets. They're looking for junk they can bring out and go, "Hey, if old stuff's worth money, Dad, we can make a lot around here, you know?" And this week, as I was getting ready for this, I went to actually search this again. And I typed in penny red, plate, and how much is it worth? And an article came up that not long ago, someone paid, get this, all right, £550,000. You know what that equals in American dollars? $875,000. Now, this is not worth that, all right? Stay away, okay? You know, just think you're coming. So I keep this in my office, so please don't come up and start looking for it. But it's not worth that. But here's the reason I tell this story. Simply this. We all know this fact, but sometimes we forget it. Value is determined by what someone is willing to pay for something. You know that, don't you? Value is determined by what someone is willing to pay for something. Now, my kids thought at first these weren't worth much. Now I go to the internet, and these are worth maybe a ton. But these are only worth what a collector is willing to pay for them. It's like your house. Your house may appraise a certain dollar amount, but your house is worth what someone is willing to pay for it. You see, God deemed how valuable we are when he allowed his one and only son to go to the cross and die for us. He declared our value. And as we look around the world, we look at everyone that we see around us, they are valuable to God. How valuable they are, listen to what it says in Corinthians. It says this in 1 Corinthians 6:20, "For God bought you at a high price." He bought you. It's a costly kind of love. Now, sometimes we can look at people and go, you know what? They're not even garage sale material people. But God looks at them and says, you can be cracked, you can be flawed, you can be dinged up a bit, but you matter to me. And on the cross, once and for all, I established your worth. I bought you at a high price. I paid for you. And maybe some of you came in today thinking, I have no value. I don't matter to anybody. I mean, I grew up, I didn't feel like I mattered or had any value to my family. Or maybe right now in your relational world, you're thinking, I don't matter to anybody. Listen to me, God established your value. He paid a high price for you. You matter to him, and he loves you more than you'll ever know. And Mary Magdalene, she was struggling. You see, Jesus probably was one of the very few men in her life that ever showed her that she mattered, that she was of value. And I don't know, maybe it was the tears in her eyes at this moment that kept her from recognizing who Jesus was. But in verse 15, it says this, "Thinking he, Jesus, was the gardener, she said, 'Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have put him, and I will go get him.'" Like she was going to be able to carry Jesus' body. In verse 16, Jesus is moved here by her love, and he says to her, "Mary." Now, have you ever had someone just say your name, and you just knew by the way they said your name who it was? That's what happened to Mary. All Jesus had to do was say her name, and she knew who it was. She turned toward him and cried out in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. And evidently she must have tried to grab a hold of Jesus, because Jesus said, "Do not hold on to me, for I have not yet returned to the Father. Go instead to my brothers and tell them, I am returning to my Father and to your Father, to my God and your God." So Mary Magdalene went to the disciples with the news, "I have seen the Lord." And she told them that he had said these things to her. And just like that, everything changed in her life. She went from being trapped to being free. She went from being trapped and hopeless and grieving to being alive. Alive. I love the story. Maybe I've shared this story with you here today. But it's a story about a guy who was out jogging one night. He was out running, and he was running a little bit late, so he decided he was going to take a shortcut. And he decided to take a shortcut through a graveyard. And as he was running through the graveyard, he actually fell into an open, freshly dug grave. And he realized what he had done. He got up and started trying to jump and get his way out and climb his way out. He started yelling for help, and no one was going to hear him. And so he just resolved himself that he is going to have to sit here all through the night and wait till next morning to come and be rescued. Well, it just so happens that a little bit later that evening, another guy was out jogging and decided to cut through the graveyard as well. And as he was running, he fell into that exact same grave, freshly dug grave. And as he did, he got up like the other guy and dusted himself off and tried to jump out and tried to crawl out. He started yelling for help. And about 5 minutes into it, he felt a hand on his shoulder. And then he heard a voice saying, "You will never make it out." Oh, he made it out. And maybe that's where you are right now, friends. You feel trapped, and you're never going to make it out. You feel trapped by the failures of your past. You're afraid of your future. Right now, you're overwhelmed with the current circumstances, and you don't think you can make it out. You can. You can make it out. With the power of the resurrected Jesus Christ, you can make it out. You can be free. You can experience freedom. 2,000 years ago, God turned the calendar from a Saturday to a Sunday. 2,000 years ago, God turned the calendar from death to life. He turned that calendar from being trapped behind an 800-pound boulder to being free, to being alive. And the same eyes that closed on that cross on Friday opened in that grave on Sunday. The same hands that went limp behind those nails on the cross on Friday stretched out on Sunday. Jesus died for your past sins. He gave you the resurrection power to face what you face today in your current situation. And he opened the door for your future to hope forever with God. And maybe right now, maybe, you're hearing that voice in your head. You're hearing that stirring of your spirit going, that can be yours too. You need this. You need this in your life. I dare you. I plead with you to find freedom. It's the same voice that Mary Magdalene heard in her head, in her heart, that first Easter morning. And that freedom can be yours as well. Jesus said in John 8:36, "If the Son sets you free, you are truly free." If the Son sets you free, you are truly free. Maybe some of you remember a couple months back when we did a weekend called Heroic Decision Weekend. Maybe you remember we had a pool on the stage right over here where we had about 70 people come up and get baptized that day. And maybe you remember on this side of the room over here we had a cross. And over here people came and put cards just like these on that cross. And on one side it said things like, "I'm making a heroic decision to do this in my life." But on the other side it said, "This is stuff I need to leave behind." And I just want to share with you a couple of things that people wanted to leave behind. Need for validation, approval from the world. Bitterness, perfectionism, eating disorder, anger, doubt, greed, shame. The worries of uncertainty of knowing if I will have a job in a year. Pornography. Help me to leave fear and excuses behind. No more excuses, laziness, or procrastination. I'm leaving this behind, lying to myself to make a wrong right and getting lost from you, God. Living for the world only, not being a good leader of my family. Insecurity, infidelity, vanity. My awful drug-filled past, lying to people. Anger, bitterness, unforgiveness, jealousy, hatred, control. My desire for more than I have. My gossiping and my negative attitude. Alcoholism, self-pity, frustration, financial bondage. My pain for my infidelity. My guilt for having failed in my marriage. Anger, being codependent, serving God halfway. One last one, and just one word, partying. Partying, I bet there's some stories there. But I tell you what those people found that day. You know what they found? Freedom. They found freedom at the foot of the cross. They found freedom leaving their past behind. What has trapped them and chained them behind at the cross. And they were truly, truly free. You see, that's what's incredible about Christianity. It is all about second chances. And though you may feel trapped by your past and your failures in the past, or trapped by your present circumstances that seem overwhelming, or trapped by fear of the future, Christianity is about second chances. It's about a second start. God says no matter how much you fail, no matter who you are, no matter how trapped you feel, you can have freedom. 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 You remember those 33 Chilean miners 2 years ago who were trapped beneath 2,000 feet of rubble? Like 700,000 pounds, they said, 700,000 tons of rock collapsed on top of them. And it covered them up, and for a day, for 2 days, for 3 days, for 5 days, 10 days, 20 days, 30 days, 40 days, 50 days, 60, on day 68, finally this little white capsule poked through the top of the tomb that they were in for 68 days and brought them freedom. It was their way out, and it was a small, narrow little capsule, like 21 inches in diameter. And this was the way out, and they knew it was the way out because rescuers actually came down in this capsule to bring them out. And so all they had to do was to get in that capsule. That's all they had to do. And yeah, it was small. Yeah, it was tiny. And yes, it was cramped, but that was their way out. And no one was saying, oh, it's too narrow. It's too small-minded. Oh, it's too arrogant to think that this is the only way out. It was. It was the only way out. And I love watching this video. Watch this video, because what happened is all the friends and family and coworkers came around and they began to celebrate. As these guys came out of this tomb of dirt 2,000 feet beneath the earth, they began to celebrate and high-five and sing and hug and cry. And my hope for you today is this, spiritually speaking. I know a lot of you are trapped and you need freedom. You need freedom in your life. You need to be freed from the things that are tying you up. Listen to what Jesus said. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. And then he verified that he was God by dying, being buried, and rising again. You see, Christianity, the resurrection is what makes Christianity different from every other religion out there. I mean, you can go to the tomb of Muhammad, you can go to the tomb of Buddha, you can go to the tomb of Confucius, you can go to the tomb of Joseph Smith, and guess what you will find there? They are occupied. I've been to the tomb of Jesus twice. Let me tell you what I found. It was empty. It was empty. Jesus says, I am the way, I am the truth, I am the life. And one time Jesus said, when you know the truth will what? Set you free. Free from failures in the past, free from any of the obstacles you face right now in the present part of your life, free from fear of the future. I know what some of you are thinking right now, Jason, you're saying, you know what, I'm skeptical about all this. I mean, it sounds good, and I know that's what the preacher's supposed to say, but you don't know my past. I mean, I've blown it pretty big, or you don't know what I'm facing right now. I don't think I can overcome. Jason, I'm skeptical about all this. Well, you know what? Let me share with you a story. This week, I received this email. And here's what it said. Dear Jason, I want to share with you what happened to me last Sunday. As you may know, I've been struggling with the pain of my divorce for over 3 years. I would have thought by this time I should be able to move on. However, every day the anger and pain was trapped inside of me. I literally felt dead inside. Few people knew how much I was hurting as I wore a happy face while I went through life. I knew I had to forgive not only those who hurt me, but myself. I also knew I didn't have the strength to do it, so I had been praying for God's help. However, nothing was changing, but I knew I had to continue to trust God. In your sermon last Sunday, you spoke 12 powerful words. I was wrong. I am sorry. Please forgive me. I love you. Little did I know how powerful those words were. I couldn't get them out of my head. After I got home from church, I sat down to read the paper. Without warning and for no apparent reason, I completely broke down and without thinking, dropped to my knees and cried out to God to just take the pain away. I can't live with this anymore and I can't do this on my own. And in that instant, I felt this comfort almost like a hug envelop me. I never experienced anything like it before. I knew I was truly in the presence of God. All the pain and anger just seemed to flow out of me. I felt a peace and a calm and a freedom that I'd never felt before. I had not known for a long time, and it was like God had filled this hole in my heart that was empty. Later that afternoon, I sat down and wrote a message to my ex-wife, whom I had not communicated with in 3 years. I thanked her for our incredible daughter and how much she had enhanced my life, and I wished her a happy Mother's Day. When I sent the message, I knew that forgiveness and healing had begun. Jason, for the first time since the divorce, I am no longer in pain. It is hard to put into words the transformation that I have experienced. I am free. I am so grateful for this ministry, this incredible church family, and most of all, our mighty Father who is always there to comfort us in our most trying times. Freedom. That's what freedom brings. You can be truly free. Free from the past, free from the present, free from the future. I know today that's exactly what some of you need here today. You need the freedom. Would you stand with me? I'm going to ask our servers to prepare to pass out communion. I'd ask you just to bow your heads. I'm just going to lead us through a time of thinking about a couple things in prayer. Because I know some of you today, this has just struck a chord with you, struck a nerve. And you came in here today not expecting to hear this message. You came in here today thinking you're just going to kind of go through the motions, go through, hey, I'm just going through another Sunday morning. Or maybe you came here today and you thought your hope was just gone. And there was no hope for you. And today you've heard something that you know was meant for you. This message was for you today. It was God reaching down in the pit that you're in and trying to pull you up. And you want freedom. And maybe for those of you here today who have never experienced the freedom of walking day in and day out with Jesus Christ, today is that day to find the greatest freedom you can ever, ever find. It can be yours. It can be yours today. And maybe for some of you today, it's saying, you know what, God, my relationship, my walk with you has gotten a little bit cold, a little bit distant. I need to draw back closer to you. Thank you for the reminder today that I matter. Thank you for the reminder today that you paid a high price for me. I want that freedom. I want the freedom that Mary Magdalene felt. I want the freedom that the guy in this testimony feels. I want freedom in my life. Would you pray with me? Father God, we just come to you now. And God, I thank you so much for what you have done. I thank you so much for the death and the burial and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. God, I thank you so much for each and every day of our lives, how you are there. How, God, sometimes we don't even realize you're there reaching down for us, trying to pull us out of our despair, out of our hopelessness, out of the chains that bind us. You are trying to break us free, God, because you're love. You are a God of love. And so, God, we just want to come to you here today and thank you that when we face situations in our life, when we're afraid of the future, when we're worried about the current circumstances, when we can't get past our past, you were there to overcome. You have overcome. And we have the resurrection power of Jesus Christ in our lives. So, Father, we just come to you today and we say thank you. Thank you for your love that chases us. Thank you for your love that sent your Son to die for us. God, we are grateful. Thank you for giving us a nap when we are trapped through the resurrection of your son, Jesus. And God, we pray all this in his powerful, in his mighty name. Amen.